Do you know that feeling when everyone is talking about a movie that you haven't seen? Have you ever felt compelled to make some vague comments just so you can join in the conversation? Well, what if you were in too deep? Do you think you could convince everyone that you'd seen it? Or do you think your version would be so much better that no one would care? Here at Faking Movies, we're always the ones who haven't seen the movie.
Anything you can do, I can do better. I can do anything better than you.
Oh, you can.
Yes, I can.
Oh, you can.
Yes, I can.
Oh, you can.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Faking Movies, episode 271. Oh, I bet you didn't think I'd ever bring back that construction.
Oh, it's been quite a while.
It's been like 90 episodes since.
Two!
About that.
71, yep.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's what I was doing.
pardon me. I was sick this week, fellas. So I've still got a little bit of a coffee cough. I gotta say, I've never been a tea person. You know, with this sore throat, I've been drinking a lot of tea, and I gotta say, I think like after medicine, tea might be the best medicine because like my throat feels real good right now.
Like testosterone or.
No, like steeped dried leaves.
Oh.
That you inject into your butt.
No.
Yeah, okay.
The vein on the top of your wiener.
Oh, the Snickers
get it
bar.
Straight to the shaft. That's smart.
Yeah.
That's really
Snickers
smart.
Bar.
Oh god.
I think I made a mistake though because I've been drinking Earl Grey all day because I'm usually drink like obscene amounts of coffee, and I was like, I this is the most caffeinated tea I have in the house, so this is what I pretty much have to stick to. So I just defaulted to Earl Grey again, and we are recording at night. I'm hoping I min-maxed it with enough whiskey this time to cancel that out.
Yeah.
Though
that
I like a nice Lady Grey. You should try that next time. Yeah,
it is delicate. Yeah.
Well, it's more bergamot forward, and I really like bergamot.
I do like a bergamot. Yeah, that's true. Mm. It's a very nice scent and flavor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you think we can start a tea corner to piss Kevin off, much like the bean talk?
Speaking of, did your bean club come, Lee? Mine came.
We got our shipping confirmation, but it hasn't arrived yet. Did you get yours?
I did. There's some pretty good looking shit in there, and there's one very, very, very special bean.
What is it? What is it?
I'm not gonna ruin it for your boy.
Did they put the cassoulet into the bean club this time?
No.
Well,
I mean,
well,
I think you can cassoulet anything, but
fellas, I went off book. And with a friend who lives here in town, we collectively ordered some beans.
Oh,
just like, I mean, it's not as cheap as Bean Club. Yeah, so
honestly, Bean Club isn't that much cheaper. It's just they save you on shipping mostly.
And
yeah,
you make
exactly. That cool zine that Zach
and
has
so
much.
That's why we were splitting it. So you know, the shipping more or less disappeared into the beloved envelope of beandom.
I don't know that I've ever considered the Bean Club to be economical. If you tell people how much it costs for 1 pound of beans, they stare at you like
Zach,
you just told them.
I've had this.
The earth is flat.
I've had this conversation with friend of the show Kev several times. And the reason I've had it several times is because he always is blackout drunk and forgets every single time. Sorry, Kev, I know you have a lot going on. I'm not being judgy. I'm just stating a fact of why I've had to repeat
judgy?
This so many times. 1 pound of dry beans makes roughly 5 cans worth of beans. And
I think
it costs roughly 6 cans worth of beans. It's
yes.
negligible.
But like a dry pound of beans from Walmart is like 79 cents. And these are like $5.
Sure.
I'm comparing price of canned because, again, you tell somebody I cook with dry beans, they're like, I just need canned beans. Why are you eating dry? It's like, because they're fucking good. Okay? Beans.
Yeah. I pay
the beans
for the,
again, everyone. Tune out for the next 2 minutes if you don't want to hear about the fucking beans.
Yep. Yep.
I'm excited for my sojourn into the realm of beandom.
I think it is placebo-ish, but like Lee has said in the past, their beans are actually fresh. A, they cook faster. B, they do taste better, but I can't tell if that's just because I'm so excited that I'm part of the bean club or not.
I think we understand how to cook beans better than we used to.
That is definitely true. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Zach, what did you do with those heirloom Mexican beans in the last order? I still have some. I didn't use up all of those yet.
I think I have like half of my last one. I have started the part of my bean club life where I'm going to slowly accrue more and more bags of beans until they're it's like overrun my entire house.
So we're almost done with all of our beans from last one.
I have like 3 bags left.
At bare minimum a big bean on a Sunday, and then we try to do another bean related thing during the week. So
yeah, your partner is amenable to the beans. Mine was sick of them on like bag number 2 and was like, I can't believe you've done this to our family. And I said, listen, you'll grow to love them. And I was wrong, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah,
you simply adopted the bean life. Born into it, molded by it,
in a mask of beans, and then I choke a bunch. Yeah,
yeah. Well, that you already eat supine. You choke while eating constantly. It doesn't matter what the food is.
True. The babies have really fucked up my esophageal nightmares. I eat like a human now at a table, which sucks.
Why?
Ew. Eating prone is so much more challenging and thus exciting. Yeah.
Mm. Oh yeah, so it's like a tasty treat for you now when you can eat.
Oh, that rare weekend where you have at least one meal alone, and you can it's like, ooh, I guess I'll lay down on my back and eat now to see if I die.
Babe, I'm just going to lay on the floor and eat a gordita crunch.
Yeah. Babe, strap me into the inversion table. I'm going to get nasty on this soup.
Babe, get me the... give me the Viggo Mortensen eating chair from Crimes of the Future. Oh. Bust that out. Yeah,
we have one of those, and then I go, never mind. Don't go in the basement.
Don't look at the credit card statement. I bought another sauna, not an eating chair.
You know, he broke his foot when he kicked that helmet.
I like how many memes I get that are Lord of the Rings themed because I just constantly send them to you. But yeah, I like how many of them. I like how many of them are just the idea of watching that movie with another person and the amount of sheer effort it takes to not bring up that he broke his foot kicking that helmet. Yeah.
It's about half of them, I would say.
And you know, when he's fighting that Uruk-hai leader, like, he actually deflected
He
that
had
knife
to hit the knife away, yeah.
Because the guy had bad aim. And
you know, when he says, when he answers that he's taking the hobbits into the wild, you know, he hits the camera with his bow as he walks by, but it was just the best take. So.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to get a good take in the dark and everything, so. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
They did a lot of day for night in those movies, though, especially in Two Towers, and it looks awful most of the time because there's also a bunch of CGI. I'm thinking of the scene with the Ents. This is why I don't watch the extended.
Oh, during the Ent mood?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Ent mood. You know, interestingly, the word moot used to mean meeting, and now it became moot because nothing was happening at the meetings. So the definition changed over time.
Well, that's very fun.
Meaningless occasion instead of actual important meeting. So that's pretty fun.
Someday it'll evolve to just mean work.
Yeah, or Blumpkin, like who knows.
I guess it depends on what industry you're in for that one. Do you work in one particular part of California or the entirety of Florida?
Wow. Is it Van Nuys?
I don't remember. Home of porn? I was trying to think of it. I couldn't.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Let's get into a movie, shall we?
Yeah, we haven't movied in a while, so we're goofing. We're new boot goofing in here. Thank you to Marielle, of course. Our stalwart wind beneath wings, as it were. Since we don't use that website really anymore, we're just gonna thank her for being her. That's our new thing, I think.
Yeah.
Thank you for being a friend.
Bum, 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 bum. Zach's faking a movie this week.
Yeah, yep. Zach's faking a movie this week. What you got for us, Zach?
Well, yeah, you got 15 to 17 minutes because this title, I feel like every time I say it's beyond, or the not the title, the
oh, cast right.
Beyond the Pale. This one.
I forgot.
I practiced reading this ahead of time. Because
you know, there's a recording of
there's that, a really good recording. It was on like a Gap commercial or
it
something.
It was in the late 2000s, and it may or may not be the poet reading it. It's unconfirmed. Like, people just said it was, and no one's actually sure if it actually is. Mm-hmm. But it's old enough to have been.
Let's let Zach get into it, shall you? What's the movie and what's the cast, Zach?
Yeah, movie is called Blind Fury, which is pretty fun title, honestly. Cast starring Rutger Hauer. You doing?
How and you then, doing? Yeah. How you doing?
Yep. Good, clean, fun. No objections there. next, we start with the parenthetical, of course. Come, my tanned faced children, follow well in order. Get your weapons ready. Have you your pistols? Have you your sharp edged axes? Pioneers, oh pioneers, for we cannot tarry. That's a name. Here, we must march, my darlings, we must bear the brunt of danger. We, the youthful, sinewy races, all the rest of us, all the rest on us depend. Pioneers, O', that's part of a name. Pioneers, Quinn. Terry O'Quinn, John Locke from Lost.
God, he's a man of faith.
Damn you.
Know.
You.
Yeah, he's a man of faith. And, you know, I really did contemplate doing all like 25 stanzas, but I only did two.
You chose correctly because I just wouldn't have done it. I think you got the perfect range there, probably.
Yeah. Yep. I'm pretty pleased.
Are you familiar with that poem at all, Zach?
I had to look it up.
It's one of the first free verse poems, isn't it?
Well, I don't know if it's one of the first. I mean, like, his whole career is free verse, more or less.
Yeah, but... and generally, I don't like Walt Whitman that much.
I love Walt Whitman. I know. I know, I'm a basic bitch. Well, but yeah.
Like, we can get into this another time about how I like verse more than free verse, but like, that's fine.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Back to the classics. This one's great. Mm-hmm. Megalodon fostered the people. Weird. Concise, funny, makes sense.
Two different things just sort of jammed in together.
Yeah. And Lisa, mutiny on the Blounty. Blount-y.
I like that also one fun. Because when Seth sent me that one, my immediate thought was that sounds like if Pauly Shore were in a nautical movie.
Mutiny on the Blounty.
Day. And it's because somebody is bogarting the joint, you know, specifically. Mm-hmm. What if we just redid Mutiny on the Bounty, but with Pauly Shore?
I think we could get him. We
gonna could go him. Around the horn, good buddy.
I'd watch it. I'd be in it. I'd finance it.
Who would play Fletcher Christensen? That's the question.
Brendan Fraser.
Yeah, that would be. He's hot right now. I mean, I guess. Speaking of which, I saw Killers of the Flower Moon.
I heard long but good.
Brendan is barely in it.
I didn't know he was in it at all.
Yeah, he's in like two scenes, and he plays a character in a very specific way. And I think a lot of people I've read are like, "Ooh, it was just really big, and it took me out of it." But like, I think it's actually exactly the way that character needs to be. But anyway, that's not the movie we're doing.
Yeah,
Encino Man. That'd be weird.
It's like he does this big, like bombastic, big city celebrity lawyer thing, and like I think it would really stand out if not for the fact that the first of like three scenes that he's in. Martin Scorsese shoots him at such an angle that he looks like Godzilla. Like, he's shooting him from so low that he's just like a monster. And it's like it's really cool. Anyway, high reps. Very good movie.
The dialogue that I've heard about that one is mostly like, how much did Leonardo DiCaprio get paid for that? And he's barely in it, whereas how much did the indigenous actors get paid?
Well, Leo's in... if anything, too much.
Or like, as far as I'm concerned. Well, yeah, like he's like focal but really shouldn't be.
Yeah, sure. I also don't know that I enjoyed his performance.
That's generally the criticism that I've been hearing. But
Lily Gladstone is Lily the Gladstone. Absolute truth, of course.
Yes.
So, mm-hmm. Although I think I liked her other movie this year better. Unknown Country? I forget. It's this hyper indie that I went to see that she's in. She's incredible in it, of course. But anyway.
She's great in basically everything. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Super good. Okay.
Like, she would be really good in A Mutiny on the Bounty.
Oh, Mutiny on the Bounty, buddy.
Man, the straight man against Pauly Shore is such a thankless job. I can't even fucking imagine.
Yeah, it really fucked like, up Stephen paying? Baldwin for, like, the rest of his life, so.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It sent him into the alt-right-averse, yeah.
So is Stephen the alt-righter, or is it Daniel?
Steven is.
Yeah, Steven is, I think.
And he hung out with Pauly Shore for like... He hung out with Pauly Shore for like 4 weeks, and he was like, listen, drugs are bad. Nancy Reagan was right. Mm-hmm. I'm a Republican now.
Throat goat.
I might have kissed Kylie Minogue for a few minutes on this set. Mm. I forget if she's the one that he hooks up with.
Yeah, I don't remember the pairing, but...
Yeah. Yeah, and William Baldwin is, like, totally the opposite. Like, back when I was still using the Twitters, William Baldwin, all of his online engagement was like, this is fucked up. My brothers are fucking need to stop. Like, yeah.
Like, I hear Alec killed a guy.
Remember that time my brother shot a guy?
And then blamed everyone else? I mean, granted, I get it. Accidents happen, but he was the producer and was the person who cut corners around the safety anyway.
The more you heard about that one, it was like the first thing you heard, you're like, that doesn't sound good. And then there were like seven more things, and they were all more incriminating.
Yeah,
yeah.
God, it's like, damn it, it's just, Alec.
Like you should process bad things that happen to you in the way you need to process them. But like the most one-to-one comparison is the actor who fired the gun when Brandon Lee died, and apparently that guy for the rest of his life walked around like guilty and depressed and stuff, and it's like and he was like completely cleared of having
of
doing anything even a little bit wrong.
No, it was just the wadding, right?
And that he was wasn't like the one actually who did an accident. So like I'm just saying the way people react to these things, you shouldn't judge because you don't know what's going on in their heads, but like it just is so different in a way that makes me very uncomfortable.
It's different enough that it's telling of the the character of the man.
He and his wife Hilaria.
Yeah. Hilaria. I hear she's from Jacksonville, Florida. Not Espana.
I thought she was from Boston, but
maybe.
I like Jacksonville. I like the way you say Jacksonville, Zach.
Jacksonville, Florida.
So you're faking a movie, right?
You're faking a movie. You want to give the regular cast just so you can get them out?
Yes. Yeah. Blind Fury. We have Rucker Hauer, Terry O'Quinn, Meg Foster, who I think is actually Irish, maybe, and Lisa Blunt.
Fun thing about Meg and Lisa, they are both John Carpenter
sort of
returnees.
Mainstays.
Lisa
in Prince of Darkness for sure.
Yeah,
that Meg, we've done on the show. Meg is in They Live, which I don't think we did on the show because know what They Live is. Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Meg has aged into a thing that makes her like a female drug kingpin quite often, I think.
Hmm.
Like she's got that face.
Such
about her.
Intense eyes.
She does.
Very intense.
And she's kind of small generally, so I think it makes for a good like you wouldn't expect it kind of situation.
Yeah. And Lisa died very young.
Oh shit! Didn't know that.
Yeah. Apparently, she was like 50, and had like some sort of blood clotting disorder.
I just remembered the other day because I was looking at some movie she was just in. Narcissa Malfoy, actress.
Mm-hmm.
Draco's mom died in like 21, I think.
Really?
She was also like late 40s, I think. Yeah, again, like a freak thing. Sad.
Wow,
real shame.
Yep. All right, I have two faileds.
Okay, good.
There's a lot of ellipses in here, and I'm gonna try to
do that. I love with ellipses. My voice.
Mostly because they're bad, right? So, Balls of Fury prequel. Question mark?
So it's about like
Furies in there.
The actual Asian and fake Asian characters from Balls of Fury, or is it about that guy who isn't Josh Gad? That Hollywood really wanted to make happen for a hot minute.
Josh Gad, who I think can't sing, so he can't be Josh Gad.
I thought that guy was a musical guy too, though.
Oh, he might be.
He's in History Boys. Or is History Boys not a musical?
Boy, I'm asking the wrong. I don't know.
Sorry, let's go. But that guy,
Yeah, that guy. Next one. There's a blind person, and they're mad? That's nothing.
All right.
I mean, that's a literal sort of the take on the title.
Interesting. Interesting.
Just what it says on the tin.
Yep. Yeah. So didn't bother with that one. All right. Real thing. We open, as all movies of this type do, with an announcer explaining the rules to the tournament in an overproduced fake TV segment.
Okay.
The annual shoot is upon us, and this year's competition is stiffer than ever. We get super dope team intros, again, very overproduced in this, like, made-to-look-old kind of way, for the full field. Meg and Lisa are underdog protagonists, and they have a notably forgettable intro somewhere in the middle of the pack. Rutger and Terry are brothers and also the favorites and have this grand flourish of an intro at the end of the pack. They are, of course, our baddies.
Sure.
Rutger Hauer has to be a baddie. That's just how it works. Rutger will stop at nothing to win. Terry, true to form of every character he's ever played, is a bit of a softie, but partnering with Rutger for the strategic advantage and, like, familial obligation. So, what are we actually doing? Through the rest of the intro exposition, we learn that this is a race where you have a two-person team, and the drivers are forced to take a drug that blacks out your eyesight, and then they have a World Rallycross-style navigator.
Very cool.
Yep. They have a navigator in the passenger seat who has to verbally guide you through hundreds of miles of an apocalyptic hellscape as you drive completely blind.
Holy shit.
You know what's great about this? It's so easy to scale it into an at-home video game experience.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It writes itself. Yeah.
It's just like playing drunk Mario Kart.
Mm-hmm. And, like, this is the kind of movie that if I saw it, I'd be like, if I saw, like, a trailer or, like, the description of this, I'd be like, gonna be dumb? Definitely gonna see it in the theater.
For me, it's like, if I saw the trailer description, I'd be like, oh, man, can't wait to watch that on Hulu.
Right. Yeah exactly. Sure. We're gonna get the views for sure. Yeah. All right, so it's one of these gladiatorial-style things where the competitors are all poor and the organizers are rich, like Hunger Games kind of thing.
Yeah, I was thinking Hunger Games when you started.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Similar.
Peter Malak.
Yeah, similar ugly power structure for sure. Mm-hmm. So very exploitative.
Or the Running Man.
I hear there's
a sequel coming out that Arnold Schwarzenegger is producing at some point, or maybe in production, and then there is a reboot, also unrelated, happening at the same time, because apparently they let the rights lapse.
They had to have lost the rights.
You could just do whatever with it now. Sure. So
the thing is, there's no way we've run out of Stephen King things to adapt at this point.
No way.
No. They've already done 600, and there's at least 1,000 more, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He just does that. It just, he pours them out of them.
They're remaking all of them too. They just did
Pet Cemetery.
I think we talked about that in the last ep.
They just did the one that like a four-year-old Drew Barrymore was in.
Firestarter.
Mm-hmm. I heard that one was trash.
Both were very, very bad. Okay, anyway, classic chance to really up your station in life kind of situation. Hunger Games, right?
Sure.
So we get some more establishing stuff, seeing all the cars, which vary wildly. Some are kind of Mad Max style, because you'd sort of expect that. And some are like Baja racing trucks. Like, these are people sort of making assumptions about like what the terrain's going to be like, what the best sort of strategy is here. Mm-hmm. Obviously,
wait, how do you make a racing truck out of beer battered fish?
No, it's the Subaru Baja. And then they do beer batter that. Which complicates things quite a bit.
Okay. Right. Yeah,
got it.
Yeah. And you have to fill the trunk with Baja Blast, which.
Oh. Mm-hmm. real sloshing around, and also like wow,
distribution.
That's like a secondary thing. Oof. It's like depending on how much of it you still have at the end. That's bonus points. Yeah. They take time off. Yeah,
they weigh you before and after. And exactly. Yeah.
Does Rutger Hauer have a like a mid 70s Toyota Hilux?
Oh, just never dies. You can light it on fire and it's still
just it is just an immortal truck with with of course a submachine gun mounted to the back.
Oh, several. Yeah. I think I do have the we'll just keep going.
Okay.
So Mad Max Baja racing trucks, some are maxing speed only. So it's kind of twisted metal-y. Like, remember picking cars in Twisted Metal?
Yeah.
And you can like get the fast one, but you're gonna die really fast unless you can escape everybody. Or you can get the big beefy one, but it's slow and boring, and like it's that kind of thing, right?
Yeah. Or you get the ice cream truck and just ice cream truck.
Maniacal clown. Yep.
Yeah.
Sweet tooth.
Yep. Okay, so at this point, Rucker's already being a real dildo to everybody, but especially Meg and Lisa, because you know, misogyny. Who the hell even are you? Just all the usual sort of villainous traits.
Tack ships, you know, sea beams glittering, whatnot.
Yeah.
Tears in the rain.
No, Orion's around, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Skipping ahead, everyone has to ceremonially take the drug and then the race starts. So this all happens like, you know, under the watch of sort of the...
Under the watch of Joe Rogan. And Aaron Rodgers.
You should get in this cold plunge and then eat this clay. And then,
you have to go into this dark room and take ayahuasca because we're white guys and it's really spiritual for us.
Yeah. And then inject the tea into your Snickers bar. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So.
But no vaccines. That's poison.
No. Yeah. Unless you inject it into your dick and then it's fine. I don't know. I won't pretend to understand.
And fuck those guys.
Well, welcome to our new Manosphere podcast.
We're targeting only 12 to 14 year old boys, tragically.
Yeah, I know. And we all look like boiled babies, I guess. Is the best way to just, like...
And then, oops, we're all in jail. So the universe works out in the way it should.
Okay. Yeah. I forgot about that guy.
Yeah, he's the worst. Anyway.
They're all pretty bad.
Manifestly. Meg's vision starts to fade a bit, as expected, just as they get situated in their totally milquetoast car. It's not like an 89 Corolla, but it's like they tried to...
But it is like a 92 Accord, so...
I was about to say a 92 Accord, because I had a 92 Accord.
With the V6, but it's like an anemic V6, so it's... It's fine.
It's a V6, but like one of the pistons is just plugged. It's confusing.
Yeah. It's a V4 and a half,
Zach, was that a low-cal strawberry beer voice I heard you doing just then?
You know it was. She-wolf. That's my she-wolf. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's fine.
It's fine.
Yeah. But then her vision fading kind of stalls out without actually fully fading.
I thought that might be the case.
Eyes of Laura Mars.
It's not what that's about at all.
I know that. I'm smarter than you.
Jesus. So immediately they think, oh shit, this is incredible. We can like play along, quote unquote, but still have a massive advantage because she can like partially see still. Mm-hmm. So they set off, very psyched on this situation that they found themselves in. But in like 10 minutes, it becomes pretty clear that while the drug only partially obscures her vision, it reacts with her system like a brontosaurus dose of trucker speed. So she enters a quote blind fury and starts behaving and critically driving like a fucking maniac.
She enters the trucker
I love that
sphere.
in a 92 Accord.
I mean, you can only push it so hard, but somehow like she is willing it to go recklessly.
But like a 92 Accord will run until it just like explodes. There are two fucking swing arms on each tire. It's so baffling. I had to take a tire off of one of those fuckers once. It was a nightmare.
I needed
two different impact wrenches.
But you don't have to jack it up. You just get a friend to kind of hold it.
Well, yeah. Like, that's what I did, but still.
Yeah. So Lisa, her navigator, is understandably extremely scared of this nightmare she's been abruptly plopped into. But after a minute or two, it seems like Meg is, like, actually driving quite well. Like, she is absolutely out of her gourd.
Yeah, she's
but
just
like,
Jason Statham-ing it.
Yes, she is, like, she's got the tunnel vision and she's, like, found her lane and, like, is doing the thing. So, all right, so the race continues for a bit. We get a lot of shots of the TV-style leaderboard and commentary going back to that sort of framing device.
Yep.
Obviously quite surprised at our main team's unlikely success. Terry, as the sightful teammate on his team, eventually figures out what's going on, having observed Meg's, like, too-good-to-be-true driving. Like, you can tell if somebody can see and can't see. Like, she's, like, driving actually blind, right? So they're sort of always jockeying for the lead with each other, so they have a lot of opportunity to, like, see what
she's
doing.
And we kill off some incidental characters on the way. And,
Oh, yeah. Lots of fiery crashes and whatnot.
Hell yeah.
Yep, got to do it. So periodically they have to do speed pits for fuel and whatnot and check the car.
And speed to do speed.
Well, no, she's got plenty of that. It's very long acting, so I don't know.
I mean, it probably lasts as long as the blindness lasts, so...
Sure, long enough for the race to
pretty hard to explode.
Yeah.
Well, you hope not, but I mean, you can go down a piston or two like this 89 Accord. But how many valves do you really need in a heart? Like,
well, yeah. on my based on my dad's experience, all of so
I think that is true. Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, Zach thought he was going to have more time to take a sip.
I did, didn't he? Nobody vamped. My sip break was thwarted. So periodically, read that already. They end up at one simultaneously because, again, they're neck and neck. So as Terry and Lisa are out refilling gas, by way of their fully functional eyes, he does a pss at her in a way that Rucker hopefully won't notice. He says he knows what's up, and at this point he doesn't actually know, but he thinks that
this is bluffed,
something's happening. He indicates that he won't snitch and will even sabotage their driving, but that he wants a cut of the money. So this is a surefire win for all three of them. He finally gets out from under Rucker's thumb.
Fuck over Red Car,
our two mains get to win. Like, everybody sort of rises in the social hierarchy, whatever. So Lisa seems to understand the Rucker-Terry dynamic at this point, and, like, seeing that Terry's actually kind of a good guy and chasing the same thing they are, she agrees. So Terry explains that he'll give Rucker bad nav info and cause them to wreck in a way that looks accidental, like, sort of near the end. Like, you know, should be fine. So Lisa agrees, and they quickly part ways and race off yet again. After some minor racing dramas, again, more people dying, of course, Rucker figures out that Terry is in cahoots with our mains, having heard just, like, little bits and pieces of the pit stop conversation and sensing a shift in Terry's demeanor. Because they're brothers, they, like, know each other, right?
Sure.
So, eventually, there's a very dramatic scene where he waits until very near the finish line, since they've run the race many times before, they're the favorites and whatever. Rucker overconfidently thinks he can just wing it from there. Like he's like
his muscle memory will take over.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Boy.
So he whips out a gun and shoots Terry dead in the face in the passenger seat of his
fucking
own car.
Hell.
Whoa. Yep. This is the big, like, oh, didn't really see that coming.
So I didn't see that coming at all.
I didn't
take that blindness drug. So,
Well, there's that. Now what he neglected to realize is that gunshots in enclosed spaces make you quite disoriented and very, very fully deaf for some amount of time.
So now he's down 2 out of 5senses.
Yes.
Is he going to taste his way to the finish?
Yeah. Is he driving by umami?
You wish you could. You wish you could in this situation. Yeah. So in the resulting haze, he wrecks horrifically, nearly taking out Meg and Lisa's car for some added drama. The carnage of the wreck covers the gunshot carnage. Like, it's so bad and bloody and gory that like no one really can tell that Terry was shot. But I think, you know, just for a nice little Easter egg, we see a little diarrhea seep out of what's left of Rucker's driver's side door.
Just like a drip.
Just so we know it's not like engine or fluid engine or oil of some sort. There's a little bit of corn. So you can tell.
Yes.
Corn in a tomato skin.
you gotta pine nuts. Yeah,
you gotta go on the internet forums and like find the exact timestamp and the frame and everything. Like you would miss it.
Yeah, like Tom Cruise's penis in All the Right Moves.
Sure, yeah, exactly. Or like that.
David Bowie's penis in many, many films.
Yeah, you don't have to actually like so look much. For that one. It's just around.
Yeah. I'm just saying it's enjoyable. So
For sure. So Meg and Lisa cross the finish line, still swerving to correct course after the wreck, but now easily winning compared to the rest of the pack. Big flourish ending. Everyone loves an underdog story. At the award ceremony, Meg is very visibly out of her fucking mind because it's not yet worn off.
Yeah.
But everyone chalks it up to the high of sweet, sweet victory. While Lisa nervously, clearly cannot wait for this to be over lest they be found out. So smash cut to 1 year in the future with like a, you know, title card that explains as much. We hear the sound of two doors closing and Meg turns and winks at an extremely anxious looking Lisa, but her eye twitches a whole bunch as she does it. So you know that we're doing it again and it's happening again. And then the car roars to life and we fade to black. So
sweet.
Very fun. That's a, I'm into
blind
that's
fury. Like,
yeah, I'm very into it.
That is an excellent effect. Yeah.
Thanks. I wrote that extremely high yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
As well you should. And it turned out quite well.
Yeah.
So, Zach, before I get into the IMDb for this movie, I want you
to look
at the picture.
I'm just noticing the tagline on the poster, which I did not notice until now.
Uh-huh. So, Zach, I want you to go to the chat, look at the poster for Blind Fury. What do you think is going on in this poster?
Is that supposed to be Rutger Hauer? I guess it is. He is on the title card.
It's Rutger Hauer, and it's Blind Fury is the poster, and the tagline is "He may be blind, but he don't need no dog."
Wowzers!
He does need a dog. The movie wouldn't suggest that he needs a dog.
No, absolutely not.
I love the smirk on his face. I've never seen the man smile
in my
life. The
smirk is so weird.
Yeah,
so weird, and it like fits the tone of like four scenes, and that's it.
Okay,
like,
that's not a Rutger Hauer expression, as far as I've ever seen.
He does a lot of like practical goofs against random people
with his
samurai sword.
This is kind of my issue with the movie is the just there's a lot of tonal whiplash in it.
I also enjoyed it.
Again, what is the casting? Were they like, we need Leslie Nielsen? Oh, he's busy. Let's get Rutger Hauer.
So Zach, can you describe what's happening in the picture?
Yeah, he's wearing sunglasses. I mean, I was going to say to imply he's blind, but there are words on this that literally say he is blind. And he's using a samurai sword to cut a bunch of guns, barrels in half, it looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
He is dressed a lot like John Locke from Lost, actually.
Yeah,
he's wearing like a fishing vest and a weird flannel.
Terry O'Quinn would have been better casting for the expression that I'm looking at.
Yeah, we'll get
it. Does kind of look like Terry O'Quinn, doesn't it?
Yeah. So, Blind Fury is a 1989 film, and here's the IMDb one sentence summary. A blind Vietnam vet, trained as a sword fighter, comes to America and helps to rescue the son of a fellow soldier.
I mean, that's basically the whole movie.
I mean, but
that does not match
coming to America. He's returning. He's American.
This looks like, again, it looks like a Mel Brooks goof 'em up movie on the poster. Yeah. That does not sound
doesn't
like the
though?
Movie.
Doesn't it though? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I get into a slightly longer summary, there's just a couple things I want to bring up.
Sure.
Just because I don't want to forget. So Seth, was this a movie you watched a lot as a kid? Because you were very excited when you saw this movie come up in the conversation a few weeks ago.
I feel like I watched it maybe when I was getting my doing my PhD, like at a bad movie night.
I see.
But,
okay.
Like I was just so drunk or whatever that I don't remember any of the details of it until rewatching it. I did, but like,
yeah.
Your initial reaction was just like what I associate for myself with like movie I put on nonstop as child. Like,
Yeah. And like it is also like very reminiscent of, you know, the Zataichi.
Well, it's explicitly it's an
adaptation of the like,
I believe the 19th Zatoichi Blind Swordsman movie. Like,
right.
Ooh. Are right. these goofy in nature or serious in nature?
You know, I've never seen one. So this is another thing.
They're kind of in the middle, right? Like they have a very whiplashy, not the movie, whiplash like it's not abusive. It is goofy, but also like he's such a competent swordsman in the in the original Japanese that like he like is so much better than everyone that he's never actually in danger and therefore is doing lots of goofs. Which is what happens in this movie quite often.
Right. Sure. Okay, so that was the thing I was wondering is like maybe the reason why the tone shifts so much is because that's what the source material does and it's just something I'm not familiar with. Okay, so that's
fun.
An answer.
They're fun films, but
last episode when I was trying to no-scope the director of the movie I faked, Predestination, and I was way off, the person I guessed was Philip Noyce, an Australian director. He is the director of this movie.
Yeah. So, weird. Okay.
Yeah, totally anonymous workman-like movie that it is. Yeah.
Makes sense.
And one other thing I want to mention, basically all the trivia I saw for this movie, they really focused on how actor I forget his name, but he played the vice president on The West Wing. He is the producer of the movie, and it was the first movie he ever produced, and it's like just over and over again they keep bringing up, and it's like Tim Matheson. It's like, so that's what the most interesting thing about this movie is, huh?
Yeah,
that a guy produced it.
Doesn't seem noteworthy in any way, but okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool.
Okay. So, fade in.
Please, I'm going to try to do this quick, but I have a feeling Seth is going to add a lot of detail as we go.
Maybe.
Okay. Opens up in Vietnam. Rucker Hauer is a soldier. He gets blinded during a mission. he wakes up and he gets like taken in by some villagers. And
Terry O'Quinn is there too as a pyrotechnic, like a pyrotechnic.
Yeah, he's like
specialist.
his army buddy, who's he's an explosive specialist. Yeah. He wakes up. Everybody, I guess, thinks he's dead or whatever. Villagers take him in. They teach him how to function again without his sight, and he learns how to be a blind swordsman. Seth was really charmed by his makeshift little sunglasses that they give him.
Yeah, they give him like little eye patches made of banana leaves or whatever, and he can clearly like see underneath them.
They're just act.
Well, if you can call it that, yes.
Now, are the Vietnamese known for their swordsmanship? I feel like we're crossing the streams.
Also,
it's a
baffling sword because it's like a hidden blade.
It's a cane. Oh. It's like a cane sword. It's not quite like a katana,
So nothing like the poster then. Okay, cool.
It doesn't have a tsuba, which is the hand guard.
Yeah. It's the tang sort of thing. Yeah.
No. Tang is a different thing.
It's just obviously. Like all those swords.
Tang is the extension of the metal into the handle, right? So that the tsuba is the hand guard.
I fucking stepped in it here. Okay.
Yeah, you really did, dumbass.
Seth. It's just like all the swords. It's just like all the swords in the second King Killer book when he goes to train with that one group, and they make fun of him because he wants a hand guard.
Yeah, what a loser.
Idiot.
And it's crazy because they're a whole society where all of their intonations are done with hand signals. So if you get injured fighting, you can't talk to people anymore.
Tough one.
Damn,
anyway, those books are really good.
That was a really good book.
Cool.
Yeah. So then the next thing that happens is he's kind of just in the U.S. like walking along,
as
doing
a
his
homeless
thing.
Guy, just walking.
I
along
guess
the
I don't
highway.
Know if he's explicitly homeless or if he's more of a Jack Reacher, just wanderer. You know, I took it more as like a Kane from Kung Fu going from town to town.
I kind of gather that he was a disaffected Vietnam vet back back in the country that he lost his sight to defend that doesn't respect him anymore.
I was going
to
say that is keeping with the historical record of this thing. Right. I think.
So he's going, we eventually learn he's going to go see Terry O'Quinn.
Right.
His old buddy,
Terry O'Quinn,
who actually we learn later thought he had died. He didn't even know he was alive.
Oh, okay.
But on the way there, he stops at like a bar and he gets a burrito, and a bunch of Latin toughs try to like, they trick him into putting really hot salsa on his, or hot sauce on his burrito. And then he makes fun of them for it not being very hot, and then they want to fight him, and then he has a really goofy fight scene with them, and this is what I'm talking about, because they
accost a woman, like, so like
that too.
They have like a back and forth, and then this woman walks in and they're like, oh hey, like, we're gonna sex at you, and like she drops her purse and Rutger Hauer like catches it with his weird sword cane. And then like proceeds to like, the toughs are like, oh, give us that purse, and Rutger Hauer is like, oh, I'm gonna goofy wander around and defeat you all in a very
anyway, this is our first exposure to his fighting, and it's like explicitly comical. I mentioned this because of the next one, the next fight scene that happens. So he shows up at Terry O'Quinn's house, and Terry O'Quinn's not there.
Yeah,
okay, Seth. What?
No. Okay. Keep going. I just remembered what happened in this movie.
Yeah, Terry Quinn's not there. It turns out that he has left his family, and his wife is Meg Foster, and he has like a 8-year-old son who really sucks piss. Like, he's the worst.
Billy is he's a real Greenland shark, except you know, only 8 years old.
Sure. Yeah.
So like the opposite of a Greenland shark, but he still sucks piss. So
yeah. I skipped the scene where we meet Terry O'Quinn, and he's being dangled upside down outside of a hotel window in Vegas, because he went to Vegas and he's a chemist, and now a hotel owner who is like can't compete with the new flashy Vegas casinos is holding him hostage, forcing him to make, and they say this over and over again, drugs that are totally legal, so he could sell them and pay off all of his loans.
What?
It really looks like crystal meth, though.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Like, this is such a cocaine script. Drugs notwithstanding. Yeah. Like, they're like, hey, Terry O'Quinn, what's his deal? And they're like, was that idea number 40,000? Like, he's going to go to Vegas and he's going to be a chemist. Why? No one cares. It's fine.
So I mentioned this because the hotel boss has like a heavy that recurs throughout the movie. And while Rutger Hauer is hanging out with Meg Foster, learning about Terry O'Quinn, is he even in Vegas? He might even be just being Reno.
It's Reno.
The biggest little city in the world. Anyway, the two cops and the heavy show up and they're like, we need your kid.
His name is Slag.
Thank you, Seth. Well. Mm-hmm. We need your kid. And she's like, why? And she's like, oh, well, we just need him. He's a witness. She's like, what did he witness? And then she won't like let it go. And the heavy kills her. He shoots her in the chest with a shotgun.
Yeah.
And this is why I brought up the goofy fight scene earlier, because then Rutger Hauer wrecks shit, including literally the first thing he does is cut someone's hand off. Like, there's just a hand flying through the air. Like, the type of violence in the movie is so different from scene to scene.
So knee-jerk. Yeah, no, he just completely blasts these guys
He kills two cops,
to death, which is great.
And he doesn't kill the heavy because you need him to recur throughout the movie. Mm-hmm. But he does, like, knock him out and injure him. Anyway, Meg Foster's like, you gotta bring Billy, who sucks piss, to his dad. You gotta promise me.
Her dying breath as she breathes through all the piss fumes coming off her son.
She's like, and then, I can't take this anymore.
So Rutger heads outside and he runs into Billy. And he's like, hey, Billy, you gotta go here. You gotta come with me. And they go to the bus station. He's like, what the fuck? I'm a little kid. I don't even know you. He's like, we're going on a bus. We're gonna go see your dad. He's like, where's my mom? Don't worry about it. She's going to meet us. And then the kid is like very obviously distressed and is like, and a cop comes over. He's like, is everything okay here? And Rucker Hauer goes, yes, it is, officer. It's fine. He's like, okay, child abductor. That's cool. Go ahead. Yeah. And like,
yeah, it's so fun.
This is a thing that happens all the time. John Cena just did this in the Fast 10, right? Like,
yeah, it's true. Yeah.
There's always this thing of like, I'm with a kid and this is awkward. And there's that thing is going to come up like 100 times.
It's because you're a white man with a crew cut.
Yeah. But like, well, classic goofums, really.
Rucker Hauer doesn't have messy hair in this movie, but it's not a crew cut. No, anyway, they get
he looks put together and also is blind, so.
Sure. Yeah.
They get on the bus. There's some scenes on the bus and some scenes at some bus stops where they both they both fall in mud and make fun of each other.
They bond. Rucker Hauer plays some jokes on people.
Yeah, this movie does not know its own tone from what I'm understanding.
And then eventually some new hired goons catch up with them. And
brothers that are like goofy.
And they recur. They're like comedy henchmen who recur throughout the movie now.
Yeah, it's like Rocksteady and Bebop, except like
it is. Yeah.
It's basically just Rocksteady and Bebop.
But human-ish. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then there's a scene in a cornfield where, again, Rucker Hauer super violently kills some henchmen. Yeah. And the heavy is there again, and again doesn't die, but
yeah, because he's wearing Kevlar, he manages to survive being like just sliced to shit.
Yeah, doesn't he like collapse a building on him too? While the kid is also in the building, and then the building just doesn't fall on the kid, like.
Yep, pretty much.
I say a building; it's like a tin shack, like.
Yeah.
So now they have to.
But corrugated steel can really fuck you up. I have scars all over one of my hands from corrugated steel falling on
That's in no way surprising. Yeah. They have to hitchhike, I guess. And that more or less goes off without any problems. They just end up in Reno. And also, Lisa is Terry O'Quinn's girlfriend who works in the casino. And it seems like maybe she's in cahoots with the casino owner, but then it doesn't. I don't know.
It's a little baffling. Okay.
Sure, I feel like they left out a scene where she like has a change of heart, but anyway. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the two, Bebop and Rocksteady, are in her house lying in wait, and then they kidnap the two, the blind man and the little piss boy, and they throw them in the back of a van, and they take Lisa and are like being very sexually aggressive towards her in the front of the van.
A panel van.
Like, and then Rucker Hauer and the piss boy are able to escape by like getting a lighter out and burning off their ropes or whatever.
Yeah.
But this is after the dude throws his sword out the window. They get out of the van. And then they beat up the guys, and then they both run to get in the van, and the kid and him look at each other, literally he looks at him even though he's blind, and they say in unison, who's gonna drive? And then Lisa
comes over and drives.
She's in the van, she's like, come on boys, let's go, because she's also Southern in the movie.
Yeah, it's kind of baffling.
So then they drive back to get his sword, so then they go and do a casino assault.
Drive back to get the sword, and then after they find the sword, Lisa drops her glasses and Rutger steps on them, and then there is a chase scene of a blind Rutger Hauer driving the van.
Okay. So we're not that different after
through the center of Reno.
Okay. That sounds
with the kid dictating the navigation. So it's basically your movie.
You don't say.
You're right. Seth, I forgot all about that. You're absolutely right.
I feel like we lost
It's like a 10-minute scene.
That's
it is really long.
Isn't the overarching goal to get the kid back to the mom? Like,
no, mom is super dead.
The mom got killed in that first scene.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was Terry O'Quinn.
Blasted with a shotgun.
Oh, it's Terry O'Quinn's kid. Okay.
Yeah. So we're trying to get the kid to Terry O'Quinn, even though Terry O'Quinn is like compromised.
A dick.
Yes.
Or
whatever.
So then Lisa hides them out with a friend of hers. Big surprise, that friend ends up murdered. But Rucker Hauer goes, I guess, undercover, but really he just shows up at the casino and starts gambling and exposes they have like a radio controlled roulette wheel to cheat people. And he exposes it by using his sword to cut the shirt pocket off of the is a roulette man a croupier also, or is that just
I'm not sure, but yeah.
So he cuts the shirt pocket off of that guy, and he's got a remote control, and everyone standing around the table freaks out, including a lady who grabs the roulette wheel, rips it off the table, and starts screaming and shaking it in the air. Like, well, that's actually fun. Pretty okay. Great.
That's sort of the through line through the whole movie, if there could be one, is that if there's a problem, it can be solved with a sword slash.
Clearly.
Yeah.
Oh, whether this door is locked? Cut off the knob. Oh, this door is locked? Cut off the hinge. Oh,
we don't want someone to follow us through that door? Let me cut the knob off before we close it. Hold on. That's because that happens.
That does happen later with Terry O'Quinn. It is the perfect solution to all of life's problems.
Yeah, he does some slapstick on some, because they're holding Terry O'Quinn in the penthouse. Does a little slapstick on some henches. Gets up into the penthouse. Terry Quinn's like, I can't believe it. I thought you were dead. And they reminisce for like a hot second. And then he's like, hold on. Let me destroy all these drugs I made, because these legal drugs are bullshit and dangerous. And it's like, they keep hammering on the fact that these drugs are legal. So it's like, so what are they?
Doesn't matter. Like, that has no bearing on the story.
You're
just making like off-brand cough syrup at that point. Like, well, who's buying that?
There's a very famous, like, that's the loophole for all designer drugs, is they're like, you can make illegal the exact formula, but if you change like one chemical bond, it's it does often the same thing, but it's not technically, like, it's a whole fucking thing.
Yeah,
but like, there's, who cares, that doesn't matter.
There's a really weird cannabis loophole in where I live right now that has to do with just getting obscene amounts of hemp and doing something to it that basically turns it into cannabis after the fact or something.
Hemp is just so inefficient, is the problem. So
Well, right, and that's so
the,
you know,
the big federal one is Delta 8 right now, which is not the technical schedule one Delta 9 weed. It is a very similar thing, but technically legal, and everybody's like, well, here we are. I don't know.
they like get out, they escape the hotel again, there's some henchmen shenanigans. They get back to where the kid was, and the friend is dead. The kid is gone, and they get kidnapped
again by Slag.
Slag and the hotel owner. They get a phone call, of course, because they knew exactly where they would be. And they get this call, and it's like, hey, I'm at this ski resort. You know where it is. Bring your drugs.
Lake Tahoe or whatever. Yeah,
80s movie. We gotta have a ski resort, of course.
And then there's a scene where like the hotel guy is like talking to like, I guess, a big time drug dealer about how great the drugs he's gonna sell him are, and the drug dealer is like, old man, I don't give a shit. Just sell me these drugs. Or like,
that's pretty much it. Like, and it is wonderful. I really enjoy how like blasé everyone is about the situation.
And like, they had so many scenes of the hotel guy talking about like, oh, I took out an extra line of credit with the bank, and I just can't compete with these fancier hotels. And it's like, I don't think we need to understand the plight of this business owner at this point. He's forcing a man to synthesize drugs and kidnapping his child.
Like, it was the go-go 80s. You can do whatever you want.
It's true. Yeah, I guess that's true.
Nancy Reagan, the throat goat, said it. She,
So they get there, and it turns out that the hotel guy hired a Japanese swordsman, I guess.
Oh.
I don't know how far in advance he did this. Like, if this was a reaction to,
has to be,
or
a
if he had this guy on payroll already. Like,
that would be very weird if that's the case. This has, like, to be,
he's
a
got
fight
a lot
fire
of overhead.
Fire.
Maybe that's his problem with why he can't pay back the bank.
I'm paying this fucking sword guy in cocaine and 500 grand a year.
Like,
He's just sitting around. I wish somebody would come in here with a sword and fuck shit up so I could use him.
So they have a fight.
Now there's a samurai fight.
And that involves an electrocution in a hot tub.
Yeah.
Oh,
pretty great.
Not a sword. Weird. Okay.
But mm-hmm. but there's a scene in the sword fight that they have. And it's like a totally decent sword fight. It's a very Wrecker is very, you know, like he's all defense because this guy is so good that he has to just wait for an opening. It's much like Obi-Wan
using Wrecker form is, three. Yeah. Also, he
definitely uses
blind.
Form three. If I'm not mistaken, Lee, you're the expert on form three, of course. But
sure.
Anyway. More of a form six boy. But
oh, yikes. Okay. Some aggression.
This is why you guys like this movie. This is your.
Oh, I did not like this movie. Oh. I did. I fucking thought love this movie it. Was like kind of bad. Anyway, there's a scene during the sword fight where like they're fighting and they're like they get in close and they're, you know, they're locked up with their swords. And Rucker Hauer puts his free hand out and touches the guy's face and goes, Japanese. And that was really weird and gross.
Yeah. yeah.
Oh, my.
He does that a lot where he's just touching people and is like, oh, you're this ethnicity.
I'm not going to lie. When you guys very much in the beginning of this one, you were like, Rucker's in Vietnam. He goes blind. And Terry O'Quinn's there. And I genuinely, my brain went, and he's playing a Vietnamese person.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I'm so glad it did not end that way.
Yeah, it could have been. It really could have been. Yeah. So then you think everything's solved, and then but you forgot Slag, the heavy that's been around the whole time. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they have a little bit of a fight, and Terry O'Quinn slices him so hard that he smashes the window behind him while he slices him.
Whoa!
Or, I'm sorry, Rucker Hauer slices him so hard that he smashes the window behind him, and Slag falls out the window, and as he's falling, just like Darth Maul in Episode 1, his body breaks in half.
Totally perfect. Darth Mauls him.
Perfect.
So it kind of looks like a combination of when what's his name, when Dick gets thrown out the window at the end of RoboCop and of Darth Maul.
Yeah.
And
that's fun. I was gonna say Slag has to get his comeuppance in some spectacular.
Yeah. Do they kill the hotel guy too, or does he just get he gets killed?
Yeah. He gets
Terry O'Quinn kill him.
I think so. I think he just like fucking shoots him.
Fitting. Something. Yeah.
And then the cops come, and you know everybody's got their little like shock blankets on, and it's fine. And then Terry O'Quinn and Lisa and the kid and Rucker Hauer are all going to get on a bus and go to San Francisco because they're going to live in San. He's going to be a chemist in San Francisco.
Sure.
Which I don't know if that's supposed to be a joke about LSD or it's just the whatever. But anyway, then Rucker Hauer is going to get on the bus and he looks at it. He doesn't look at it, I guess. He gets his ticket and he's like, nah. I'm going to go walk under this.
I'm going to keep being a wandering swordsman.
Yeah. Oh, and the kid is all broken up about it and like, but you know, it's okay. I did forget to mention there's a really uncomfortable scene where the kid is really sad about having learned his mom died. Cause eventually he does tell him.
Sure.
And he's crying and he's crying. And then Rucker Hauer's like, ah, good. You're crying. Goes, it takes a strong man not to be afraid to cry. And like, while that's a good message, the scene really, to me, felt like he was going to molest this child.
Oh.
And I don't know if it's just Rucker Hauer's general menacingness.
I think he is just menacing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, just tenderness from Rucker Hauer reads as menace to me.
Yeah.
As creeping menace.
For sure. For sure.
He tells him, he's like, do you cry, Rucker Hauer? And he's like, I can't because the part of my eye that cries doesn't work anymore, I guess. I don't know these details.
No one needs these details.
Well,
what are we doing?
Then he cries at the end.
Because he cries at the end. And then he notices that he has a tear and he smiles because he made him care again or something.
Dear God.
I care now. You made me care.
I guess.
So that's that movie that happened. Man. They started planning a sequel during filming and then it didn't make it like really any money, so they just never did it.
The box office was $2,600,000. So
it probably cost like four.
Yeah, maybe. It's not clear.
This movie doesn't know what it is. Like the Naked Guns, they made 3 or 17 of those.
Three.
I don't know.
They made three. And then there was a TV show in the '70s that the movies are based on.
Right. But like, yeah, this movie doesn't know its lane from what I can tell. So
I don't
doesn't
know.
Seem like that was ever going to be successful.
I think it's super fun. And Siskel and Ebert agree with me.
They gave it two thumbs up.
is baffling. Wow.
Listen. Oh yeah. No, it's not.
Siskel had chaotic taste, and Ebert hated most things. So, like, when I hear that I disagree with Siskel and Ebert on something, it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. No. Yeah, I think that it's harkened so much to these like Japanese classics.
Right,
that they're like nostalgically being like, oh yeah, those were good, and this is the American version of those, ergo this is good.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Even though they're not that good, but they're still fun and dumb and, full of something.
Swords.
Mm. Swords. full of Snickers bars.
Snickers bars. Yeah. Yep.
Oh, I'm going to think about that tomorrow when I'm doing chores and just giggle.
Anything you want to talk about?
No, I brought up my things because I knew that no matter how short there's something about an 80s movie where there's so much incident that like occurs over the course of, basically the plot is a guy is blind and he protects a child and brings him to his father.
Yep.
That's the whole plot. So many things that happen to get us there. And this is just a thing about the 80s where I can't summarize these movies. It's just, I knew it was going to take me forever. So what little I had to say about it, I said up front.
That was, again, it's because it's like 1,000 vignettes within the plot.
This je ne sais quoi is cocaine. That's what it was. It's I've been up for 3 days and I wrote the entire script.
This movie does have manic energy.
It's just wild swings, that's all.
Yeah, okay
why not. So
just like, but which is very unlike the control that Rucker Hauer has on that sword.
Wow.
True.
Yeah, he said, I did read a thing where he talked about how he spent a fair amount of time working with an actual blind martial artist to like, I know I'm not gonna be able to do it, but like I would like to at least understand the way I should, like my body language should be. So it seems
he must have read the script prior to this. Like surely he knew what movie this was going to be. Like
he wanted to do a good job. Like I can't,
admirable, no, I guess, and, but and, yeah. I can imagine a world in which he again does the Keanu Reeves job.
Maybe
Wick,
he's
like,
a really big fan
of the
Japanese movies. It's based on.
But
and
then
he's
like 30 seconds into filming this, he must have been egregiously disappointed. Like,
I think he enjoyed it. He seemed to be having a good time. It didn't ever seem like bored and tired of it as you get so often with people. So
I guess the tone that you've described doesn't really match what I think of when I think Rucker Hauer. Like this would be like Malkovich being in like a fucking like Goof 'em Ups. Like Malkovich is Austin Powers or something. It's like this just doesn't
Malkovich doing a voice in an animated dinosaur movie that he still is bitter about to this day.
Yeah. Gotta pay those bills.
But
and the ex-wives.
Malkovich did like Burn After Reading, for instance, which is
Burn After
theory.
Reading is a great
But that's a smart
theory.
Funny
goofy.
Movie.
It's also the Coen brothers, so like you just show up and it's like the Coen brothers want me to do a thing.
That's smart funny. That's not like stupid funny, which
I don't think
like
so. I think it's like the whole point of that movie is that it's stupid.
Everyone is stupid.
Literally, the last line of the Coen movie brothers. Is what did we learn here? And it like nothing. We learned
absolutely
nothing.
Fucking nothing. Yeah.
But it's well thought out because it's the Coens, so like fair enough.
I get what you're saying, but
yeah.
Right. Seth, what else would you like to say about this cinema?
Honestly, I don't have much until we get into ratings, and let's do it.
What's our score?
Okay.
The IMDb with 18,000 votes is a 6.3.
All right. Right in that comfortable zone. Okay. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Lee, you want to go first?
Yeah. Zach, movie. Outstanding. I watched that movie over and over and over again. I'll give it a 9.6.
Mm-hmm. Woo!
All right.
Nice.
This movie, Blind Fury, the original, Philip Noyce, Terry O'Quinn, Rucker Hauer. I didn't really like it. 4.2.
Okay.
Interesting.
It's not my version of 80s movie, you know?
Oh.
Yeah. They went to a ski resort and they didn't have a race. Why would you do that?
That's yes. Oh, wow. I won't take off more for that, but
sure,
yeah.
Sure.
Exactly.
That's built into your score. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Curious. Yeah. Okay, well, I'll do Zach first.
You don't remember my movie.
No, I do. I absolutely do. I really enjoyed it. I like your Death Race sort of thing.
Yeah.
And like,
it was modeled after Death Race because Death Race is a movie that is like deeply bad, but I mm-hmm. if that was on TV in a hotel room like tomorrow, sure, I'd be like, oh, we're fucking watching Death Race.
Zach, let me ask you a question. Are you aware that Death Race, I'm assuming you're talking about the one with Statham, right?
Yeah, the newer one. Yeah.
Okay, so you do know that it's a remake.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I haven't seen the old one, but yeah.
Well, I was hoping that I could unlock a, like, there's an original, but you already knew about it. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, no. Zach, I love a Death Race. I love how you sort of pitted the ladies against the asshole dudes. This is like a 9.9. It's really good.
Damn.
As for the original, speaking of, you know, a terrible movie that is still very, very fun, and Zach, I think actually you would enjoy this.
Okay.
We used Kevin's magical sight to watch it, if you're wondering.
It is dumb, it is goofy, it's a little plodding. Like, it takes, you know, the
more sword stuff? Oh, my God.
But I watched it.
No, there needed to be more sword stuff. That's the problem. Clearly. There's too much non-sword in between the sword
stuff. I watched it 1.5 times. Maybe was the key.
Yeah.
But, like, it's fun and incredibly stupid. And it is my kind of 80s movie, which garbage that has no tedious romantic subplots. It's garbage that has a bunch of ninja fights and doesn't take itself too seriously.
That's a good point. Rucker doesn't fall in love with anyone. No. That seems so obvious. Like, why wouldn't they put that in there? They put every fucking other thing in there.
Nah.
He's a lone swordsman on the road.
I mean, Jack Reacher falls in love with what's-her-sheriff.
Like, no, it's because he's Zoraichi. And that's just what Zoraichi is.
Jack Reacher doesn't fall in love with anyone, Zach. He just has sex with every beautiful, capable woman on Earth. That's what Jack Reacher does.
That's true. We had a different read on that, and your read is correct. Anyway, sorry.
Let me finish my rating, please. I'm gonna give this like an 8.
Wow. Okay.
I think it's a fun, dumb, full of Snickers movie.
There's full bars from Seth.
Nougat and caramel everywhere. Oh my God.
Boy. And some nuts.
Well. Mm-hmm. I mean, okay. Average together, your guys' score is, I think, almost literally a 6.3. So we have accomplished the thing statistically.
Mm-hmm. Fun.
Yep.
Yeah. So. Zach, I think you should watch this. I think you'd enjoy it.
Okay. Will do.
Yeah.
Will do. Seems great.
I mean, you have nothing but time on your hands in the middle of the night, so.
Yeah,
this is
that.
A good middle of the night movie because you don't really need to pay attention.
Yeah, I think it would have been a great middle of the night. Well, I didn't watch it middle of the night.
And Lee, what you were talking about is like it's a movie that can happen in the background in the middle of the day on cable. This is the perfect movie for that.
Yeah, this is a movie built for there's commercial breaks.
Yes.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay.
All right. Next week, 2 weeks, Seth will be doing a movie called Lover Boy, which is gonna be a thing. I'm pretty sure. Didn't watch the trailer. Saw the poster. It was like, all right.
It's surprisingly topical because it stars Patrick Dempsey, people's sexiest man alive in the year of our me 2023.
Yeah. Patrick Dempsey? It's like giving Robert Redford the sexiest man alive now.
Yeah.
Well, no, I think it'd be like giving Robert Redford the sexiest man alive in his 50s, which may or may not have happened.
Yeah. He stayed sexy a lot longer. McDreamy is still quite sexy, but like he has peaked, I think.
I looked it up. I was like, yeah, he must have a movie coming out. But the only thing he's got coming out is Thanksgiving, the Eli Roth horror movie based on a trailer from Grindhouse.
Oh, yeah. Thanksgiving. Yeah.
No, it's just called Thanksgiving. Movie. Thanksgiving is its own thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's not the... Is that the second or third one of those Grindhouse trailer movies? Machete. Oh, my God.
You're right. Yeah. And then there's Machete Kills.
Yeah. Well, which, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
They made two Machete movies.
Yeah.
Trejo got very hot. Like, he was on fire there for a
while. Listen, Trejo...
He's a decent guy from what I
want. I want good things for Trejo. You know, like there's,
yeah,
I've no reason not to. I'm happy he's getting residuals, especially now that the SAG strike's over and the residuals are going up. Apparently, yeah, it's tentative. The residuals are going up and they're not doing any fucking AI, which I'm sure, honestly, I don't know what his take on it is, but Robert Rodriguez makes so many fucking movies out of his garage that he probably wants AI because like that's just how he makes movies. Like,
was he he did Spy Kids, right?
Sharkboy and Danny Trejo plays Machete in Spy Kids, by the way.
Right. Yeah.
It's like,
you know, as soon as they said that AI thing, he's like, I can get it under the wire. And he was like, Spy Kids script 4, 5, 6, 7.
Dude,
like, let's crank them out.
There is a new Spy Kids out now. They just put out a new one.
And the kids are the original actors who are in their 30s now or something. Am I wrong about that?
I think they're the parents now, maybe.
Okay.
I don't like that.
Sure.
Listen, I've never seen a Spy Kids movie. I've just seen all those
scenes with Steve Buscemi from the sequel.
I have seen that scene of Bill Paxton from one of the sequels. That's very fun. That got turned into a meme. Yeah,
there's like a really good Buscemi quote from that I'm gonna look up right now,
guys.
How do you do, fellow teens?
Do we have to watch all the Spy Kids movies for 300?
Oh no.
There's only three of them.
Here's the quote from Spy Kids 2, Island of Lost Dreams. Do you think God lives in heaven because he too lives in fear of what he's created here on earth?
Wow. Okay. I blacked out for a second when you said the subtitle, and then whatever you said after that brought me right back into it. What the fuck? What?
I guess I have to repeat myself. Do we have to watch the Spy Kids movies for episode 300?
Again, there's only like a few of them, right? It's not a fucking Puppet Master series. Like,
oh God, we do not even pretend. Do not even joke about watching all the goddamn Puppet Masters.
It's on the list. We'll get there when we get there. Do not.
Well, let's watch Spy Kids 2, Island of Lost Dreams, with such quotes as, "Do you think God lives in heaven because he too lives in fear of what he's created here?"
Zach, these are movies for children, right? These are not adult movies.
I hate to break it to you. I want to tell you how many Spy Kids there are. 2001, Spy Kids. 2002, Spy Kids 2, Island of Lost Dreams. 2003, Spy Kids 3D, Game Over. 2011, Spy Kids, all the time in the world. I think Piven's the villain in that one.
Oh,
and then in 2023, Spy Kids Armageddon. And there's even a Zach special animated series, 2028, Spy Kids Mission Critical.
I don't wanna.
There's 20 episodes of that.
Oh, animated. Yeah. Fuck me. All right. I mean, that's not the worst, but. All right, if we must. Right,
well,
what do we usually do for the centennials? Something else.
Kind of whatever we want, I guess.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, let's finish.
We need to get out of here.
Yeah, let's finish.
We're spiraling. Yep. We're deep in the Spy Kids.
I guess so.
We can't. We can't go on.
Yeah. I mean, until next time, it's all Snickers bars.
I was hoping you were going to read the fucking tag for Spy Kids 2 again.
Well, until next time, it's all about the Island of Lost Dreams or whatever.
Yeah, right. It doesn't matter. Yep. It doesn't matter.